Coming up on the My Ag Life Daily News Report, we meet our first Farmer of the Week, and he's quite a character. Listen in during segments 3 and 4 today for David Sasaki. We also have today's news brief, but to start the show, the California Senate Agriculture Committee discussed a bill for industrial hemp, and it's a bill that's facing opposition from the California Farm Bureau and others. Senate Bill 235 was introduced by Senator Ben Allen, who spoke at the committee meeting.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. It's nice to be here. I don't often come to the Agriculture Committee, but when I do, I like to bring you good bills. So this is SB 235, which brings legal clarity and strict regulations on the manufacture, sale, and use of hemp-derived products in the state of California. So for those that don't know, hemp is a plant grown and processed throughout the world for thousands of consumer goods, including food and textiles, cosmetics, body care items, paper. In fact, some of our founding documents are actually drafted on hemp paper. One of the most commonly known ingredients derived from hemp is cannabis oil, which is commonly known as CBD, a non-psychoactive derivative with no THC. Now, as permitted under federal law, currently more than half of all states in the country permit hemp CBD to be included as an ingredient in food, beverages, dietary supplements. California already permits and carefully regulates the manufacture and sale of cannabis-derived CBD products. And remember that the only distinction between cannabis and hemp is the level of THC in the plant. However, the state's laws related to hemp-derived products are murky. So in recent years, the California Department of Public Health has issued a number of notices of violation, voluntary condemnation and destruction letters, embargoes related to hemp-derived CBD products. So, the conversation and debate in Sacramento about hemp is now entering its third year. I am authoring this proposal in partnership with Assemblymember Aguiar Curry to give the Senate ample time and opportunity to weigh in on the policy and hopefully improve upon a status quo that deprives the hemp industry, including those businesses located in California, from competing on a level playing field with over half of all U.S. states. Now, this legislation was heard and passed out of the Senate Health Committee with unanimous bipartisan support. This committee and its members, appropriately so, have been focused on how the bill impacts California's agricultural community. I spoke extensively with the chair of this committee last night and gave him a commitment in person that I want to publicly make to you today in front of the committee, because I know that the concerns that he raised to me, largely the concerns of the California Farm Bureau, are shared by the rest of this committee. And so let me just mention the key issues. The first issue has to do with the testing of hemp for total THC content and permitting a measurement of uncertainty. It's a common standard that's federally defined, allowing for narrow deviations achieved by different testing instrumentations and facilities. Now, I'm absolutely committed to resolving this issue to the Farm Bureau's satisfaction, and we're starting those conversations. The second issue is a proposed zero-tolerance standard for contaminants, which is arguably appropriate for the cannabis plant, which is not federally approved to be treated with pesticides. The Farm Bureau would like the Department of Public Health to have latitude to examine and issue health and safety regulations that it decides are appropriate for hemp, which is federally approved to be treated with certain pesticides. This seems reasonable to me, and I am again committed to resolving the issue to the Farm Bureau's satisfaction. The final issue is whether or not to prohibit hemp from being sold in a smokable or inhalable form. There is serious disagreement about this issue within the legislature. I think we would have a real trouble getting it out of the Health Committee, quite frankly, if we had opened the floodgates for that. But I'm certainly committed to the continuing discussion about how possibly to find common ground within our own Senate family and even within the two committees to find some common ground that might lead to a different proposal than what is before you today. I do ask on all three of these concerns that I ask for your indulgence today as we move forward with the bill, as it appears in print, so that we can seek resolution during conversations with the administration, which of course has its own feelings about all this. I mean, ultimately, I want to arrive at a framework that this governor will sign and the executive branch feels comfortable that it can implement. My staff and I also continue to work with opposition from a number of cannabis retailers, including some within my own district and the districts of some members of this committee. I'm absolutely open to working constructively with this coalition. Specifically, I'd like cannabis retailers to be able to sell hemp-derived products. One thing they talk about a lot is parity. And certainly under the current scheme, they would not be able to sell Under current law, they are prohibited from selling non-psychoactive hemp-derived products, and I don't think that's fair. So we should figure out a way to find parity on that. Now, I will say that the administration is actively engaged. They, of course, have strong feelings, and so we've got to address this in conjunction with them. So again, I ask for your indulgence to move forward today. So joining me today as a lead witness, we have Rand Martin on behalf of the U.S. Hemp Roundtable, and then also Eddie Bernacki from the California Hemp Council.
We have for you testimony from those witnesses.
Senator Allen's first witness, as he mentioned, is Mr. Rand Martin, representing the U.S. Hemp Roundtable. And Mr. Martin is physically present in room 4203. Mr. Martin, please begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, Rand Martin on behalf of the U.S. Hemp Roundtable. I'm also here representing Caliva, which is a cannabis company based out of San Jose. There are three objectives that we have with this bill after, as Senator Allen indicated, nearly 3 years of working on this issue. Number one is that we need to make this industry legal. It is partially legal under the Department of Public Health for topicals and creams. It is not legal for food and beverage, dietary supplements, or pet products. And all the economic projections across the country say that those are the products where the consumers really want to gravitate towards over the next few years. And we'd like California to be there as well. Number two, there are really great actors in the hemp industry now, some not so great in terms of consumer safety and consumer warnings. This bill now creates a very robust regulatory framework for consumer safety. It has testing parity with cannabis testing. It has labeling parity with cannabis labeling, including things like warning that pregnant women or breastfeeding women should consult with a physician. The third objective of this bill right now is to generate some additional revenue to the state. Again, it's been nearly 3 years that we've been working on this issue. In that time, 29 other states have jumped ahead of California in terms of legalizing hemp CBD in all of these products. They are benefiting from the tax revenues of this brand new array of products that California is not. And we'd like to see that happen with the tax revenues, with the jobs created, as quickly as possible. This is a time when we could obviously use some additional funds into our state coffers. We, like the Senator, are absolutely committed to working with both the Farm Bureau and some of the cannabis interests who have expressed some concerns. We completely support cannabis being allowed to be included in the hemp supply chain. We also support the Farm Bureau in all the things that they've requested and are working with the administration and with your Senate colleagues and you to achieve those things. We appreciate your time and ask for your aye vote today. Thank you.
Eddie Bernacki on behalf of the California Hemp Council. Which is a coalition of the California-based hemp cultivators, product manufacturers, and distributors. SB 235 is a vital measure to ensure the continued success of the hemp industry in California. Following the issuance of a California Department of Public Health FAQ in July of 2018, which pretty much prohibited the use of hemp-derived cannabinoids in foods and beverages, our emerging industry saw a serious chilling effect across every level. This was particularly felt in the area of cultivation, which lost a significant outlet for their biomass. This bill, SB 235, reauthorizes the use of hemp-derived cannabinoids in food and beverages. And in doing so, will create significant path forward for California farmers and cultivators to expand in the hemp industry. In addition, the bill creates a regulatory structure, as Mr. Martin referenced, a regulatory structure to provide significant consumer protection related to hemp-derived products, including testing, labeling, and adherence to the Sherman Act and current good manufacturing practices under the California Department of Public Health. So the Hemp Council is very supportive of the robust consumer protections provisions in the bill. I'll close by saying that the Hemp Council also looks forward to working with the author to continue discussions on how to create a similar framework for safe, non-nicotine smokable hemp products in the state. And we do understand the challenges that area presents, but we believe that there is a earnest commitment to continue those conversations. So with that, we strongly support SB 235 and urge your eye.
Four callers also offered support of the bill, but the California Farm Bureau and several other organizations called in opposition of the bill.
Good morning, Chair and members. Taylor Roach from the California Farm Bureau. We do have an opposed unless amended position for the reasons the senator very aptly articulated. We'd like to thank the senator for bringing this bill forward. It's in the interest of our hemp growers to certainly support the senator's efforts to create a legal pathway forward for processed hemp in California. We want to be sure it's done, though, in a way that remains accessible for California farmers. We totally understand the challenges of smokable hemp and the issues around that and look forward to working with others on this. One item to be considered under the smokable piece that are in our zeal for enforcement, all raw flower sold at retail, we want to make sure it's not misinterpreted as intended for smoking. Hemp can be used in a host of ways, including those have not thought of that, but unintentionally closed that door for an increase. On the whole, the bill contains hits for the hemp industry, and we'll continue to work with the senator and the bill sponsors. We appreciate your ongoing commitment to do so. Thanks so much.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Jonathan Fetkel. I would like to provide a list of organizations that I have been given permission to list as opposed unless amended. These organizations are United Cannabis Business Association, Santa Ana Cannabis Association, Long Beach Collective Association, San Francisco Cannabis Alliance, Coachella Valley Cannabis Association, Angeles Emeralds, Social Equity Los Angeles. We have met with Senator Allen and have submitted our amendments to his office. We look forward to hearing back from the Senator's office on our amendment. Thank you very much.
Yes, hello, Mr. Chair and Member Smith, on behalf of the Origin Council, representing five regionals, including Mendocino Cannabis Alliance, Nevada County Cannabis Alliance, the Big Sur Farmers Association, the Trinity County Agricultural Alliance, and the Sonoma County Growers Alliance, in opposition to this measure for reasons that have been previously stated, look forward to working with the author.
After a brief discussion about the bad audio quality on the phone lines, the senators discussed the bill. Here's Council Chair Andreas Borges.
It's fine. I think the constitutional obligations have been satisfied. All right. Seeing no other opposition witnesses in the queue, we're going to bring the discussion back to our members. I would like to take liberty and thank the author for spending a good amount of time with me yesterday going through some of the concerns raised by a variety of organizations. And as he mentioned earlier, he will be continuing the discussions with these folks with the idea of allowing for federal regulation consistency. And then, of course, you know, the tolerance level for pesticide residue and how that deals with testing of hemp. And I didn't feel it was necessary to put forward formal amendments because I think you're going to be moving in that right direction. And, you, of course, you've got the standing and your word is good that you're going to continue those discussions. Colleagues, any other?
I was going to say this is the second time I've heard this bill. We heard it in health, and certainly the issues are different here. But I trust the author is going to keep working with the opposition, and I would move this bill.
All right. Senator Glaser.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to thank the author for stepping into the space and trying to work out a knotty issue, but an important one. You've done that through your whole service here in the Senate. We appreciate doing it in this space. It's great to see you in front of the Agriculture Committee. But I know that you are a friend of agriculture. We both got our shoes dirty a few years ago walking through the farms and ranches and packing houses of the Central Valley together. And it showed your commitment to trying to understand all sides of issues. And I know that you're a friend of the farmer. Not that you agree on every issue, we agree on all the issues, but you're very committed to figuring these things out and appreciate the important value that agriculture brings to our state, to our workers. You made a comment in your opening that I think is very important, and that is you talked about the competitiveness, the need to be competitive with other states. And a lot of times in this space, we struggle because we're trying to make the perfect, and that's a great goal to try to work on in a whole host of areas, but we have to recognize that our farmers are out there competing with others in other states, and we have to be sensitive to that, and I think you've acknowledged that. And I know that it'll be part of the thoughtful work you do to try to resolve these remaining issues. And I appreciate your commitments that you have made today and happy to support the bill.
Thank you. Senator Otato and then Senator Caballero.
Thank you, Senator Allen, for bringing this bill forward. And much like my good colleague from Stockton mentioned, I also supported the bill in Senate Health, and obviously the issues are different here. You know, I and much like my good colleague from Contra Costa, there we go. I forget. You know, I know that you have a reputation of working with people to addressing all issues, and I trust wholeheartedly that you are going to be doing so and trying to move this bill forward. But I would like to see that some of these issues be addressed as you move this bill forward. And I'm going to support it today, but some of these concerns will remain. But thank you.
Mayor Caballero.
Thank you. I want to agree with what my my fellow senators have to say. You stepped into an area that's got a whole bunch of landmines, and I appreciate the commitment to continue working with all of the different parties. One of the pieces of information I've received about hemp is that there are some real environmental benefits to growing hemp, while I haven't seen the studies myself, it is reported to clean the soil, to take less water, and to clean the soil of salts and heavy metals is what I was told. Studies that have been done in Europe. So it's in our interest to look at hemp as a product for the state of California, for us to remain competitive, and for us to look at ways for us to be able to use it in a number of different commercial products that will help us to retain agriculture as part of our state, and also will help us to do manufacturing in the state as well. So thank you very much for taking this up, and I look forward to you continuing to do the work that needs to be done in order to make this right. So thank you.
Well said. Senator Allen, would you like to close?
I appreciate the confidence expressed by the committee. I certainly don't take it for granted, and look forward to productive conversations with folks who've raised concerns about the bill. Appreciate our conversation, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the wonderful tour that you helped to facilitate for me, Senator Glazer. I will make sure that as this negotiation continues, my staff will continue to keep all the members of this committee informed as we make progress. I mean, I think ultimately this is about competitiveness. I think our friends from the Farm Bureau recognize that, and I think see great opportunity here if we're able to land a couple of these key tricky issues. So with that, I appreciate your comments and ask you to allow me to continue doing work on this important matter, and respectfully ask for an aye vote.
The committee ultimately voted to pass the bill, but to first resubmit it to the Committee on Appropriations. Our news brief is coming up next. We'll be right back.
Agromayor Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromayor has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromayor can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today. The My Ag Life Daily News Report is brought to you in part by the California Walnut Board.
Here's your news brief for today. The latest drought monitor was released Thursday and shows much of the western region in drought categories, with several areas classified in extreme or exceptional drought, the two most severe categories. Much of the west remains dry. Where precipitation did fall in the Pacific Northwest and in the northern Rockies, it either missed the drought-inflicted areas or was not enough to overcome shortages. Decreases in water allocation and reduced or limited forage are causing livestock producers to respond by culling and selling herds. Fire crews are also arriving in California earlier than normal.
While it has experienced its share of drought conditions and low water supplies over the last two decades, what is going on in the Klamath River Basin of Oregon and California appears to be unprecedented. As USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey explains,
for the first time in the history of the U.S. Drought Monitor, we have seen D4, or exceptional drought, introduced just in April 2021 in parts of the Upper Klamath Basin.
Combining that with below normal mountain snowpack levels, the Klamath Basin faces water shortages that perhaps are more challenging than what transpired during the drought years of 2000 and 2001.
So as a result, that has led to some of the current water crisis situation and leading to federal action to try to deal with the water shortages,
including a Bureau of Reclamation temporary operations plan for the Klamath Basin and financial and technical assistance from Reclamation and the Agriculture Department. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The California Department of Food and Agriculture Office of Farm to Fork announced that it is awarding $8.49 million in grants to 60 farm-to-school projects throughout the state via the 2021 California Farm-to-School Incubator Grant Program. CDFA Secretary Karen Ross says the excitement to participate demonstrates how much the program's goals resonate with the school meal providers, educators, and regional food system partners. The 2021 California Farm-to-School Incubator Grant Program will fund innovative local and regional farm-to-school projects in nutrition education, sustainable food production and procurement, and high-quality student engagement. The USDA continues its focus on conservation. Gary Crawford reports.
Farmers are generally excellent stewards of the land, could be even bigger contributors to improving the environment, but there's a major roadblock for them. This from Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack. He told a House Appropriations hearing on Wednesday.
We have 45 different practices that we know will have a positive impact on soil health, have a positive impact on water quality, will have a positive impact on carbon sequestration. Farmers are anxious to do it.
But there's just one problem with that.
They're not making enough money, most of them, to do that.
Just under 90% of U.S. farmers don't derive even half their income from the farm. It has to come from outside jobs. So Vilsack says to help them and to help boost conservation efforts,
let's create markets that reward them for doing this and pay them for doing this and create, in essence, a new revenue stream for them,
which might make their farms more profitable. Vilsack says profit, that's what more farmers need to stay in business and provide a stable food supply for the nation. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The Biden administration is resuming the White House Council on Native American Affairs. On April 23rd, Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland and Domestic Policy Advisor Susan Rice will convene the first White House Council on Native American Affairs meeting of the Biden-Harris administration. Secretary Haaland will serve as the council's chair. It comes as the Biden-Harris administration has prioritized getting resources out to tribal communities to address the impacts of the administration's core policy pillars: climate change, racial equity, economic recovery, and COVID-19 response through the American Rescue Plan and American Jobs Plan. That's our news brief for today. Coming up next, we meet our first Farmer of the Week. We'll be right back.
Having problems with nematodes? Promax is your number one solution. Promax is a powerful fungicide and nematicide that works to kill and control nematodes and soil-borne disease. Promax is a powerful and easy-to-use product in your fields. WaterRite Technologies is your source for this powerful solution. Visit WRTAG.com/Promax for more information.
My Ag Life, calendar of events. Here's Taylor Chalstrom with what's happening around the state.
On April 19th, we have Advances in Grapevine Production Short Course, Session 1. On April 20th, we have Almond Board Training Tuesday, Part 8, Naval Orangeworm Best Management Practices. On April 21st, we have 2021 Tree and Vine IPM Update Breakfast Meetings, Weed Control in Trees and Vines. And on April 22nd, we have the Organic Fertilizer Association's California April Webinar. Check out those events at myaglife.com. And don't forget that registration is now open for the 2021 Almond Day, hosted by West Coast Nut on June 15th, 2021. It's going to be a virtual event with CEU credits offered.
Get more details at myaglife.com.
We put out the call for Farmer of the Week nominations, and you answered. We continue to get nominations in, and please keep sending them. Our very first Farmer of the Week was nominated by the people at Sunmate. David Sasaki farms more than 150 acres of raisin grapes and is known to be a dedicated farmer, a great employer, a constant supporter of the industry, and more. I got to talk with David and hear his story. Here's our conversation.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. From what I understand, you were originally a teacher in Los Angeles, and now you're a farmer in the Central Valley. How did that happen?
To be very honest, it happened probably since birth. I'm a third-generation Japanese-American, and my grandparents immigrated here in the early 1900s, and they were farm laborers. They worked in the fields, just like our farm laborers here do. And my parents and both of their families also worked in the field as farm laborers. So that's what the first two generations did, is they were just farm laborers, just like what we hire here on the farm. Except instead of immigrating from South America or Mexico, they immigrated here from Japan. And it's kind of like the Great American Dream story. By the time it reached the second generation was able to purchase property. And they continued being farm laborers, and then they were eventually able to financially make sure that their kids didn't have to live the same kind of hard life. So I've always been tied to this land, and it's who I am. And my story is not unique, and it's not unique to Japanese Americans. This is a story of most of my friends out here on the farm. That's why I'm very flattered that I get the opportunity to share some of this, because I assure you I'm not unique. There are a lot of, in fact, most of the people I know here in the East and Carruthers area have the same story. And they're actually more heroic than I am, because they never left. They made sure that the farm was taken care of, even while their parents were young, and they worked with their parents. So their stories are actually of a much important significance than mine. But I'm glad to share my portion of the story, and people can extrapolate from that and know that other people have done much more.
And they said that you might say something like that.
Well, you know, they look at me like, boy, what a great guy. But it's, you know, if the truth in a story, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And if you tell the truth about a story and it happens to be a good story and a heartwarming story, well, that's how I was brought up. I was taught that story and I lived that story. And I was able to go to college and get a master's degree. And I actually was a professional musician for about 20 years down in Los Angeles before I became a full-time school teacher. And I didn't have to work in the field. But I was obligated to come back. And I knew the day I left, because I had to move to Los Angeles where the opportunities were greater for me as a musician, I knew that the day I left, I was coming home to take care of my parents and take over the farm. So, you know, the story is a wonderful one, but it is what it is. It has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with circumstances.
Mm-hmm. So I have to ask you about the music, because that I did not know. what kind of a musician are you?
I was a classical clarinet player down in Los Angeles.
Oh, beautiful. So when you came back after moving away and, you know, kind of having a different life and then coming back to the farm, was it hard to get back into the rhythm of it, or did you fall right back into it?
I fell right back into it. It was like riding a bicycle. You don't forget how to ride a bicycle. Yeah. The hard part was the business end of it. We're incorporated, so I had to learn the corporation side of running this business. We're not a huge business. We have 160 acres, but we have enough to where my father had the brilliant mind to incorporate back in the 1980s, and I had been I was gone by then, so I had no idea what incorporation was. So I knew how to make raisins. There were some little, you know, little things I had to learn, but generally speaking, I knew how to make raisins. But I knew nothing about the corporate world and how to manage with a corporation. So through a lot of sit-down sessions with our enrolled agent, who was our accountant, she spent a lot of time educating me. And so that was the hard part, is learning the business end of it. Mm-hmm. But the easier part was making raisins. But the real reason I came home is because my mother became very ill. And I knew that I was coming home. I knew the day I left I was coming home. And that's why I married who I married, because I give more of that credit to my wife. Because, you know, I wasn't the only one that had to pick up the anchor and move the ship. I mean, she and my son was just going into high school at the time. And we had no control of the timeline. My mother got very, very ill, and my father became elderly, and I could see that the farm was getting depleted, and they just weren't able to handle things. But when my mom's health went downhill, we picked up and came back. And I give that credit to my wife and my son. Then with me, it was a no-brainer for me. It was an easy one for me, mm-hmm. because I grew up here.
May I ask what your wife's name is?
Yes, her name is Helen.
Okay.
And she was also a teacher down in Los Angeles.
Now she's a farmer in the Central Valley.
Yes, she is. She's the she's the treasurer of the corporation.
Farming in general, what are your perspectives about farming grapes? You know, you have probably seen, and you've kind of mentioned it, but you've seen farming in general make some changes over the years. But I hear that you're quite the advocate, or that you just naturally are able to talk to people about farming and to, you know, to give a good perspective on it. What is your perspective about farming?
Well, that's where my perspective may be a little bit different than others. You know, people are in this business to make money. And so I don't always take the most cost-effective ways to farm. Mine is based very much on humanitarianism.
Okay.
And that's true of a lot of farmers. They balance that. Because a lot of farmers, you know, I've learned from other farmers what they do to help their employees and make their life better. And I've learned from a lot of my friends that I knew as a kid who have taken over the family farms. And but I'm not as much about making the money. I like making the money. I want to make the money. My brother, I have an older brother, and myself, we've done well enough with our independent lives where we are not dependent on the farm for our retirement. So, you know, our need to make money is far less, far less of a priority, because we're not into the fancy schmancy stuff. Mm-hmm. Pretty basic. So, but at any rate, so that's basically what my attitude about farming is. And the other thing is I love it. I mean, I've always loved the process of farming. I didn't like the labor I had to do as a kid growing up.
Yeah.
But I love the process, the seasonality of it. And surprisingly enough, I like the challenges. You know, when we get a rainstorm during the harvest season, you know, we've had harvests where it's just, there's no rain. We just process them and send them into Sun Maid, and it's very effortless. And those are actually kind of boring to me.
You like a challenge?
I do. I like the challenge. But, you know, I like the challenge because I don't have the financial stress. And I can thank my father and mother for that, because they left me with no debt. I mean, everything we own is paid for. So that takes a tremendous amount of pressure off of you. So they have, in many ways, have allowed me to just sit and enjoy this. And for that, I'm always grateful. So, you know, we do things like whatever profits we make, we try to pass as much on to our employees as we can, because they're the ones that need it more. And I can do that because I don't have to write that monthly check of a mortgage. And I don't have any threat of losing the farm. And so that makes it unique. And that's, and I would not begrudge anyone or expect any other farmer to farm this way. It's just, I'm lucky. I get to do this. So it's, so in that way, my story is probably not your typical story out here. Guys out here still need to make money.
Right.
And I understand that. That's why I have to keep my labor, what I pay my employees, I have to keep it pretty close to what everyone else around here pays, because you don't want to overpay your employees, because word gets around and they talk to each other. And I don't want my employees going to other farmers' employees and saying, oh, we're getting paid this much money. And then that puts a lot of pressure on that farmer. And
right.
So we keep the labor, what we pay for the labor, is close to what everyone else is paying. But I add perks to it. You know, I provide free housing. I provide, you know, we do little things like gifts at the end of harvest, gifts at the end of each thing that we do as a crew. They get little Christmas cash gifts, and that's the way I try to make up for it. But there, and no way is that considered a labor cost, because we're entitled to do that, and I take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a fine line I have to draw, because I don't want all the farmers out here hating me.
Right, right. There's a balance there, isn't there?
There is, you know. That's life. You know, you have to try to do as much as you can what's right, but you don't want to inadvertently offend anyone or put any other pressure on anyone else. I guess you want to avoid that unintended consequence. So, you know, that in that way, my story is very unique, because I don't have the pressures a lot of these farmers have.
We continue with David Sasaki right after this quick sponsor break.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower, so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Welcome back. We continue with our Farmer of the Week interview as we get to know David Sasaki.
I think in a lot of ways your story is very unique. And you know, with your family history and with coming back to the farm, I think that there's a lot of just really interesting points. I wonder, though, if you were to pass some wisdom down to a new farmer or a young farmer just starting out after, you know, through the course of your experiences, what would that wisdom be?
If it was a young farmer who was in need of, you know, making a living, mm-hmm. I would tell them be very careful about putting yourself in debt. Farmers will expand when the price goes up or you get this big bumper crop. We've had some years where we've made a tremendous amount of money because we've had big crops and big prices. But what I've noticed throughout the years, even as a kid growing up, it's cyclical. And the reason that is because when a certain crop is making a lot of money, farmers start making that product. And supply and demand shows that, you know, you overplant and produce too much of a product, the price goes down. And now we live in a global world in which other countries are looking what we're making money on. So they start planting those things. And so now that's why there's so much pressure on the raisin industry, because during the period where we had a very good price and we were doing really well, countries like Turkey and China and other places started making raisins. And so now we have a lot more competition, so there's a lot more pressure. And this is the cyclical nature of farming in a free enterprise society. That's what we're having an explosion in almonds right now. Everyone's planting almonds because they're making a lot of money on almonds. Well, eventually, it's going to be an overproduction of almonds. It hasn't hit that point yet, but, you know, it's common sense tells you how much almonds is the world going to consume. And you get more people planting it, the price is going to go down. So you have to be prepared for that. So I would tell young farmers that don't overbuy, keep your debt down, and expand slowly. That's the best advice I could give. And while the years are good, pay off your debt. Pay it off as soon as you can. And as soon as you're debt-free, you can start thinking about expanding. And it's pretty simple advice, but I think that works not only in farming, but it works in everything.
Yeah, it's good for life.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've gotten ourselves as a country into a lot of trouble because, you know, young people, they don't understand that. And so one of the biggest problems we have in this country is people run up their debt. You know, these students that they go to these colleges that cost $30,000 a year, they're going to take out a loan. Well, guess what? Someday you're going to have to pay that loan back.
Right.
So maybe you should go to City College for a couple of years, you know, and save on that. And don't put yourself behind the eight ball right off the bat.
Right.
So, but that's not the way we think in this country. That's why we get things like the financial crisis and the pandemic and those kinds of things happen. And you've got a lot of people who make a lot of money that are in a lot of trouble. I mean, you know, when we have to give bailout money to people that make $150,000, $200,000 a year, what did they do? You know, I feel badly for them. But, you know, it's a byproduct of an attitude we have in this country, and that would be the advice I'd give to a young farmer.
All right. Well, those are all the questions that I had for you, but I really appreciate you taking some time for this.
Oh, you're very welcome. But I really want to stress in this interview mm-hmm. that there are a lot of farmers that are like me, especially the generational farmers who have an emotional attachment to their farms. Because most of my friends out here, they grew up on these farms. And I give more credit to those that took over the farms or farmed with their fathers and worked alongside their fathers so that it wasn't a, you know, they could enjoy the parents that generation before could enjoy the transition. For my parents, there was stress about the transition because they never wanted to really believe I was going to come home. And then there was the stress for my parents that he's going to give up his life to come home. We don't want that. And, you know, they didn't, I had to convince them that this is what I want to do. And then, of course, my family came into the picture. Well, my wife was all in on this right from the day we got married. She made a statement once when we were here visiting. She said, "It's always been my dream I could live on a farm." And I thought, boy, this one's a keeper. I better marry this one. that's a clincher right there. I mean, yeah, I thought, boy, I won the lottery.
You made her dream come true.
Well, in some ways, I guess. But she deserves probably more credit than I do, simply because she had to make the bigger sacrifice. I mean, she had to give up everything she was doing also. But we were very together on moving here and taking care of my parents because she was very devoted to my parents. And so I'm extremely grateful to. So she's the strength and the figure behind why we're here. And like I said, there are whole slew of farmers out here that have a greater story than I have because they've done a lot more than I have. If I can share in some of that story and just to make sure that listeners understand or whoever listens to this, my story is not unique. It's a big story out here, at least where I live.
Thank you again to David, our first Farmer of the Week. We're always taking more nominations. Go to myaglife.com, click on Daily News, then in the upper right corner, click Nominate a Farmer. That's our show for today. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.